This is the Best Boys Podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
Hello.
I thought I lost my dog. I was like, where's Carrie?
Where would she have gone, Monica?
Hey, didn't that come out on that TV show? People were like, where's Carrie? But it was not Carrie. It was someone else's name. It was also an animal, also on four legs, but then eventually came up on two legs. Where's Carrie? But
Barney?
Where's Perry? Thank you.
Is this from?
This is from
Phineas.
Yes, and Ferb.
I would argue that you and your husband have watched far more Phineas and Ferb than most people our age.
I actually have not. So
I've never seen the movies.
I've
seen one episode of the show.
I didn't even know that there were multiple movies. When Aaron told me that there were multiple,
you've
movies.
Definitely seen one of them though. He made you watch it.
The one that came out on Disney Plus. Did he not tell you I fell asleep?
Well, yeah, but like, I mean, you were there.
I was there. My body was there. My body was there.
My spirit was gone.
My spirit gone. Mind asleep. Body there.
Monica, we have to update the visors.
I thought you were going to say the vistas.
The viewers and the listeners, and I combined it on accident.
The visters.
The visinas. We have to update the listeners on our cup situation.
Oh, yeah. So I guess like a little over a couple weeks ago.
So we ordered them last week, but we forgot to announce.
Yeah. So, okay. So I would say about 3 weeks ago, Jessica noticed like one of my cups and asked me if it was a knockoff of a Stanley cup. And I was like, yeah, it is. And we realized that like we could just buy them.
Yeah.
That like we could literally just buy them because all of the kids online on TikTok all have these like Stanley cups. And they only have like the aesthetic ones. Like they don't have like the ugly colors.
Well, they were sold out of every color.
Yeah. And they were. And so we went on the website. They were sold out of every color. Jessica found them on Williams-Sonoma. Or I found them on Williams-Sonoma, but they were, you could pre-order them for January.
Absolutely not. And then we found one color on Urban Outfitters.
Yeah, it was on Urban Outfitters, but then it was not, like, I tried to buy them, and it would not, like, let me put them in the cart because it said that they were sold out, but then you would go back on the website and they weren't. It was very weird.
And then all of a sudden, an influencer announced they're back in four colors. So I went, and they were kind of ugly colors, not gonna lie, but I wanted the cup.
I wanted the cup so bad. So we both
capitalism.
Picked, yeah, I know. Literally. We're in the hellscape known as late stage capitalism here in America.
Yeah. So long story short, I texted Monica and I was like, they're back.
And then we both went on the website, bought the cup in the same color, but like not knowing that we got them in the same color.
Yeah.
I think it's because it was literally the least offensive color.
It was either black or this.
Or this. Yeah. Because the other ones were just not going to happen.
It was ugly. It was like gross blue and like white, which I don't like.
No, the white wasn't even available. Like none of them were available. Only the black one.
I think white was available when I bought mine because I bought mine before I texted you.
But the white had like a pink logo on it. It was weird.
Oh.
Like it was not a cute white.
Well, anyway, we both have Stanley cups. They are the same. So TBD if we mix them up.
It almost happened today. And the only reason why we were able to unmix them.
Yeah.
To rectify.
Yeah.
The situation.
Yeah.
Was because Jessica has sleuthing abilities from her time at USC. And
no, it's because I have eyes. And I know that sometimes I wear lipstick and you don't.
I don't. So I have never liked to wear lipstick. I very rarely used to wear lipstick. It's because like, I don't know what it is, but like anything on my lips makes me want to like itch them off.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
You're welcome.
I feel like your therapy skills are really starting to like come to the surface. It's really pulling things out of me. Just really deep things.
Except for when you pretend you can't hear my poignant questions.
I literally did not hear. I heard wah, 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 socioeconomic status. Literally. Like,
whatever.
It is what it is.
Hi, Monica.
Hello, Jessica. How are you?
Oh.
Them's fighting words when we both say them at the same time. I get very competitive.
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm
fine.
Wow.
Nothing remarkable has happened in the past like week or so. I've washed my hair twice and neither time did it come out good. So that really pissed me off.
Well, yeah. It's okay. The same thing happened to me. If I don't like, if it doesn't air dry a certain way, I get a bunch of baby hairs and then it's kind of over for me.
Yeah, I got really pissed and this is okay. This is really first world problems, but I noticed I was out of my curl cream. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to CVS. I'm going to get my curl cream, go to CVS, get the curl cream, get home in the shower, putting, about to put the cream in, look at the bottle. Cause I was like, this is a weird consistency. Look at the bottle. I accidentally bought conditioner and not the curl cream. So I didn't have any cream and I had an extra bottle of conditioner I don't like.
You know what? That was on you.
No.
That was fully on you.
I know. I didn't use my eyes.
Like, I can understand if you get to CVS and then they don't have your curl cream.
But they, I don't.
But they is, did.
I don't know if just, they did. Well, now I'm did looking, then, I'm looking back and I'm like, did they have it or was it just the same shape bottle and it was the shampoo and conditioner? I don't know. I don't know. This is what keeps me up at night.
What does the curl cream represent for you?
Vanity.
It's not that deep.
No. What? How was your week, Van Monica?
My week was good. Frankly, a blur. It's around the fall time where things start to get like, see, I do this thing where I go like, oh, it's getting really busy for me, but it's like, it's just always,
it's always busy.
There are, frankly, I should say like, I should indicate the pockets of time that have slowed down.
Sure.
I think that would make it a lot better.
Yeah.
Like my work typically will slow down in November around Thanksgiving.
Right.
And then it'll slow down around Christmas.
Okay.
And then I'll typically like be out for like 2 weeks.
I see.
And that's when I like clean my house and like organize my closets for the new year. Mm-hmm. And watch like the fireworks on the TV at 9.
And do your vision board?
Yes. And do my vision board. Which I've
never
done
a vision board.
If you're not vision boarding, you're not living.
I've never done a vision board.
Why not?
I never thought to.
Well,
I was never invited to your vision board party.
No, I didn't even have a vision board party. I literally didn't even have one. What an accusation, Jessica. All of my vision board parties are by myself.
Well,
it's me.
Then let's turn it into a party.
It's me, Adobe photos, like stock photos.
Uh-huh. And your vision?
And my vision. And Photoshop.
Okay, well, maybe we can have a vision board party this year.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Now back to the show.
This is the third episode in our Nicole Kidman series.
I agree.
I agree with that fact.
You know what? I'm Fawn Moscato, and I agree with that fact.
And we have one more after this. So this is number three of four, before we move on to our October daddy, which we
TBD.
Don't decide.
You mean October Beast Boy.
Oh my God, you're right. I'm sorry, guys. Sorry.
This keeps happening.
It's going to take a while.
It will. It's kind of like,
the
I
word
don't know.
Daddy really lives in my soul.
It's like when your parents get divorced and you have to kind of be like, at my dad's house? I mean, question mark?
Well, they're still your dad.
Yeah, but his house?
I think it's more like if your mom gets a new boyfriend and he moves in. And you're like, do I call him dad or do I call him Jim? I don't know.
Do I call him dad or do I call him Jim?
What I really recommend is calling him Jim when his name is not Jim.
Oh, see, that's very like teenage, like that's very Parent Trap vibes. Yeah. It's very much like
Jim. My name is not Jim, Jessica.
It's Patrick.
Sure it isn't.
All right, Jimbo.
Oh, right. That was the last guy.
Oh, my gosh. But anyway, circling it back to Mrs. Nicole. Mrs. Nicole Kidman, married to, once again, Keith Urban. With his flat ironed hair.
With his soccer mom haircut.
I just can't.
And his little soul patch.
Name a Keith Urban song.
Blue.
Didn't.
Blue looks good on the sky. Looks good on that neon hanging on the wall, but darling, it don't match your eyes.
What the fuck? Yeah. How do you know this song?
I just know that song. That's the only song I know by him.
I was going to say, I don't know any songs by Keith Urban.
Well, you're missing out.
I just know all of the like country songs that I like use to make fun of things.
Yeah.
Such as like Red Solo Cup. I'll feel you up.
What's the one about the truck that you like?
I don't know, but right now the song that's coming to mind is about the rain. The one that's like, rain makes corn.
Yeah, that one.
Corn makes whiskey. Whiskey makes my baby feel a little frisky. That's a good one. To like it, but you have to like bring it out when it's like a really awkward lull in the conversation.
Right.
And you're just like hanging around everyone. You're at a party. Everyone's like having a good time. And like it's like kind of quiet. And all of a sudden you're like under your breath like, rain makes corn makes whiskey. Whiskey makes my baby feel a little frisky. And then it's a conversation starter because people will be like, what were you muttering under
your
breath?
You're gonna go, one, what's that song? Two, why you singing?
Why you singing, girl?
Oh my god.
Some advice.
Oh my lord. Okay. Monica, what movie are we talking about today for Miss Nicole?
Yes, we are talking about The Owls.
This is the only one we are repeating from our last Nicole episode.
It's true. It's very exciting. This is a correct fact. The Hours blew us away last time.
Yeah.
And, you know, spoiler alert, it also blew us away this time.
Go figure.
We're going to get into it. You know what? Frankly, I think that if you listen to the first episode of The Hours, you're definitely going to be missing out if you choose to skip this episode.
Yeah.
Because,
new insights.
New insights. Watched it for a second time. I see new things. I feel new things.
Absolutely.
I have new appreciation for the prosthetic.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Likewise.
This is it. Hey, Monica, ready?
Give us the lowdown.
Oh, okay. The Hours came out in 2002, directed by Stephen Daldry, screenplay by David Hare. Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Michael Cunningham. The Hours is the story of three women searching for more potent, meaningful lives. Each is alive at a different time and place. All are linked by their yearnings and their fears. Their stories intertwine and finally come together in a surprising, transcendent moment of shared recognition.
Wow.
I know. This synopsis is wild.
Okay. So to give you a little bit more clarity, we have three different women. We have Virginia Woolf, the author.
1923.
Yes. 1923 / 1940, whatever the fuck year
when
she dies.
When she decides to end her life. Yes. Yes.
Then we have Miss Laura Brown in 1950 something.
1951.
And then we have Clarissa Vaughn. In 2002, present day.
2001,
whatever. All of these women very much connected by the book Mrs. Dalloway.
Yes.
So we're with Virginia Woolf while she is writing Mrs. Dalloway.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Laura Brown who's reading Mrs. Dalloway.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Clarissa Vaughn who in the book actually is referred to as Mrs. Dalloway. Like her chapters always start as Mrs. Dalloway. But her name is Clarissa, like Clarissa Dalloway. And she, her and her best friend have like a very strong connection to the book and to Virginia Woolf and just, they're very literary people.
Yeah.
And yeah. So it's a whole thing. And then there's a little connection between the two of them towards the end of the movie that you get.
I would say that this movie distributes the emphasis like pretty evenly amongst these women.
Sure,
like,
sure.
I wouldn't call anyone like, this is the A plot, this is the B plot. Like, it's pretty clear that this is just really, really like a series of vignettes.
Yes.
On this one, it's really supposed to be over a 1 day period
mm-hmm.
of time. And we as the audience are really just like looking at we have like a glimpse at like a day in their lives.
Yeah.
As opposed to there being like, yes, there is a plot, but it's not the primary focus of the film. The primary focus of the film is to show you like how even across all of these decades, these women are still so connected. Mm-hmm. And frankly, that it is hard to live life. That life is difficult.
That the hours are hard.
The hour, the seconds are hard. In this movie, the milliseconds are fucking hard, okay? Meryl Streep plays Clarissa.
Yes.
And she, again, like Jessica said, like they're very literary people in her world, in her circle. And I think they live in New York.
Yeah.
And she is taking care of like a dear old friend.
Played by Ed Harris.
Yes, played by a stunning Ed Harris, by the way, even in his sickly, sickly state.
Yes.
And she is caring for her friend who has AIDS. And he is kind of like fighting it a little bit in general. And it's like, it's almost like she's like tending to a wounded bird that does not want to be like wounded or viewed as a bird. Yeah. Like that's like kind of the dynamic there in 2001 in New York City with these fine folk.
Yes. So he's a writer.
Yes.
This and friend is a writer and he just won some fancy prize, like the top prize you can get for being a poet. And so she's throwing him this big party for this honor. And so that's their storyline. And then you've got Laura Brown in 1951, who's played by Julianne Moore.
And she's a housewife.
She's pregnant with her second child. And it's her husband, who's John C. Reilly. Yes. It's her husband's birthday. And so she is staying home with their son to like plan his birthday, like to make his birthday cake. And that's her whole thing. But she's also reading Mrs. Dalloway and is clearly very depressed.
Extremely. Like to the point where she's almost slightly like agoraphobic?
Yes,
correct. She's like slightly agoraphobic. She doesn't really go out very much. When she does, it's like she makes it seem like it's a big hassle. Like it's very apparent to her that the world does not welcome her in open arms. Like she feels very small. She feels very confined in her space. And like a lot of these insights, this movie really like shows you. It doesn't really tell you a lot. You kind of have to just intuitively know that this woman is like fucking depressed.
Right, yeah.
And that she feels like really confined in her space. So anyway, that's like a small glimmer of what Julianne's role in this movie is.
Yeah. And then we have Nicole Kidman as Virginia Woolf, who is who we will focus most of the conversation on. So she plays Virginia Woolf, the writer. You know her, you love her,
you know this bitch.
And the first scene in the movie, this is not a spoiler because it's the first fucking scene, and also everyone knows Virginia Woolf took her own life.
Yes. If you attended any classes in high school, any English classes, you know that Virginia Woolf like famously like took her own life.
Yes. And so the first scene is her writing her suicide letter to her husband and stepping into the river that she drowns herself in. And then it flashes backwards to 1923 when she's writing Mrs. Dalloway, who very famously at the end of the book, I was about to say, what's the name of the book? It's fucking Mrs. Dalloway, because I'm an idiot. I was like, to the lighthouse? I'm stupid. Mrs. Dalloway very famously commit suicide at the end of a book that covers one day. So the movie parallels the book.
Yes.
Yes. It's all the same. And so you get through this first day with Virginia Woolf, beginning to write Mrs. Dalloway and all of the feelings that she has coming up as she's like thinking about how she's going to write this story and also deciding like, what is the fate of Mrs. Dalloway going to be? That's the big debate in the movie, is like, what am I going to do about Mrs. Dalloway? And she really wants Mrs. Dalloway to die. And everyone around her is like, why does Mrs. Dalloway have to die? And that's kind of the message of the entire movie.
Yep.
It's fantastically done. Incredible symbolism and metaphor, etc.
It's beautiful. It's also like visually stunning.
It's such a pretty movie.
Is so gorgeous. And like, there are so many motifs that like run throughout the entire film, right. But in the beginning, like the river, like running water in general, like plays like a really big role. Like the like nature, the outside plays a really big role. A lot of staring out the window in this movie.
Oh yeah,
across all generations. It is a painfully sad movie, I will say. I think that it's something that you have to like be in the right mood to watch it without like feeling completely depressed.
I don't know. Like I'm not that depressed by this movie because it talks about like death and life and death in very frank terms, I think. And like that can be sad and triggering at times. But I think when you watch this movie, it really like, I think specifically of that scene with Nicole Kidman and her husband arguing at the train station, which is just like the most beautiful scene in this movie, where she's talking about how like the one thing that we all have control over and choice over is like our quality of life for the most part. And some people want to continue living and some people just don't. And she doesn't say it like that. She says like,
she says it really eloquently.
Like I can choose life, or I can choose Richmond, or I can choose death.
Yes. Like essentially what it boils down to is she can choose, to live and have the life be really poor. Like have her quality of life be completely terrible because she is so depressed.
Right.
And she has been up until that point and up until frankly, like the day she died, not able to bring herself out of it. Right.
Right.
And that's, she essentially like she copes with it, and cope is like a really strong word because she doesn't actually cope with it. She just lives with it. She quote unquote copes with it through her novels, through her writing, through her letters, through her journaling. Like that's how she sees the world, and that's how she experiences the world, is through her written work.
Yeah.
But what she is saying is that she really like, she could either choose to live a shitty life, or she could end it and like be in peace, essentially.
Yeah.
And no one gets it. Like no one understands it.
Yeah. They keep talking about like, there's a lot of like, some things it's just their time and we have to accept that. And in the movie, obviously it's referring to a lot of different things. It's like a bird that has died, etc. But it obviously circles back directly to like the women in this story. Not Clarissa Vaughn. She's the only one who isn't suicidal, but her friend played by Ed Harris is, and she's having a really hard time coping with that and like not making his want to die be about her.
Yeah.
So it comes at it from a couple of different points of view.
Julianne's character
is
extremely depressed and like does want to take her own life at one point. There is a suicide attempt on her part.
Yes. And then she ultimately decides not to.
It is ultimately unsuccessful.
Yeah.
So there's like a, just in general, like a lot of death adjacent in this film.
Death adjacent.
Yes, death adjacent. but it handles it all, like you said, really, really frankly and really honestly, and just like sometimes like really, really alarmingly, where you're kind of just what? Okay. That he really said that. All right. But I think where Nicole like comes into this film and decides to make this film her bitch, frankly.
Yes.
Because you have to understand that she is in a film with Meryl fucking Streep.
Yeah.
And Julianne Moore.
So
it's like, where do you go from here?
Yeah.
And frankly, what Nicole Kidman brings to the table is like a quiet storm that is so glorious and so thrilling to watch. She uses this fucking prosthetic on her nose that is just so good. Yeah. And what do we know about prosthetics, frankly? Like, what do we know about, like, special effects makeup and shit?
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, this nose transforms her entirely.
It changes her entire face. I also think she's wearing colored contacts.
I think so too.
Her eyes are still blue, but they're like a darker blue.
Yeah, they're like a stormier blue, which I think like adds to the whole. Yeah,
it
like,
really changes her face even more. And you rarely get to see her as like a mousy brunette.
Yes. And she's not, you look at her and she's like not supposed to be beautiful. Like she's supposed to be like a little bit duller, not as shiny. And it's difficult because up until this point,
yeah,
we had only seen Nicole Kidman as like a fucking bombshell. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Monica said this right before we started recording, but she's like, I think Nicole's better when she's not trying to be beautiful. And I think that's true. I don't think it's necessarily like a conscious attempt at her part.
No, not at all.
But I think it's more that like, this is one of the first times she was allowed to play an ugly character, like a character who could be all that she was and also was not beautiful. And that really changed the game. Like, it really allowed her to quite literally transform. Like, she changes her voice and her gait and her face. And she's just like so in this character. And you can see that she's feeling all of the sorrow that Virginia Woolf is feeling at every step of the way. And it makes the performance like incredibly unique, incredibly specific. And therefore, all of her ideas about like death, which you might not agree with, but like it makes you listen to them and really go like, fuck, this is a human trying to explain to me the depths of their soul. And I can't help but listen to them and take it as truth because of how in it she is.
Yes. And she brings like a quiet, chaotic dignity to this role.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That is frankly like unprecedented. Like, yeah. I don't think that that someone like Nicole, like frankly, I don't think anyone else could have done this role. Mm-hmm. And when I watch a movie, a lot of the times as I'm watching it, I think to myself like, could anyone else have done this role? Like, could anyone else have stepped in and done this like at this level or frankly like exceeded it? And a lot of the times the answer is yes. Like, I'll replace a lot of people in my mind and I'll like recast films sometimes.
Right.
Obviously there are multiple occasions where the answer is no. And frankly, those are the films that we talk about. And those are the people that we talk about that mm-hmm. have that kind of impact. It's why we talk about the people we talk about and why frankly we don't talk about other people. And I think that as far as this movie is concerned and Nicole Kidman's performance, like she herself has a confidence in her own ability and in herself that shines through in this role, mm-hmm. which is where like that dignity comes in, that like confidence comes in that frankly I don't think Virginia Woolf even had other than like in her own writing.
Right.
Like, I'm sure she felt confident like putting pen to paper and going at it.
Yeah.
But what Nicole Kidman brings of her from her own personality, that like confidence, that dignity, that like assurance, it actually creates this like beautiful picture of Virginia Woolf, even if maybe that wasn't exactly her.
Right.
It's really beautifully juxtaposed with like how mousy and small she makes herself, mm-hmm. and like all of the assurance in her voice, even in the things that might not be as confident, like the things that she's saying that might not be as solidified, still make me feel like really connected to her. And like, I get what you're saying. Like, thank you. You have like an authority. Mm-hmm. You speak like you have an authority, but at the same time, you are also really disconnected from the world and not really, and like, you're really mousy and like, not really like, you're like a ghost of a person, but also like a confident ghost.
Yeah.
It's so hard to explain.
Interesting because like Nicole Kidman is an artist embodying the life and body of another artist. And so that is a challenge all on its own. But like, it's interesting because when you watch her and she's kind of like checked out of reality.
Yes.
The difference I think with Virginia Woolf specifically and just this role is that when she's checked out, it's not that she's just like, she's not just a person who's like flighty and disconnected. You can tell she goes somewhere else. Like her sister says it really beautifully. She says like, your Aunt Virginia is so lucky because she has the world that she's living in here with us. And then she has her world of books, which is so true because when she's in her mind, she's like writing in her
yes.
mind and she's going to these various pits of thoughts. And so you look at her and you're like, I know you're not absent. You're there, but you're just somewhere else thinking about something incredibly deep. Which she just seems introspective at all times, which is a really interesting quality to see in a character because it's hard to track. But with her, it's like very easy to tell that she has gone somewhere.
Well, it takes like a certain mental strength to like to like jump all of those hurdles and like go into these really deep like mind castles to like build shit of, right? And so that's what, thank you, by the way, because that's like what I was saying as far as her confidence is real. Her ability is real. Her assurance is real. Like, mm-hmm. she's a fucking badass at writing.
Yeah.
And that confidence is so, we have to like toil to like get to that confidence.
Yeah, totally.
Like, the Virginia Woolf that she shows us is obviously extremely disconnected, disjointed from reality, not really present. And we have to like fight to like see that. And yeah. Nicole does this beautiful job of like letting us peek through the curtain and like you see the wheels turning in her head. And frankly, I don't know how she does it. Because it's crazy. You'd think like it's very creepy for the camera to linger on her face.
Yeah. And like, she's like darting her eyes back and forth and just like,
and she looks like she's building something in her head. And you're just like, okay, I can watch this all day. Like, I'm waiting for someone to come out with one of those like lo-fi beats YouTube videos.
But it's just
her Virginia eyes like Wolf, darting. Like
muttering like, this is downright.
Yes, literally, I'm waiting for someone to like come out with one of those like coffee shop vibes, high definition.
Yeah. but yeah, like you were saying, it is like such a confidence in her knowledge, which is why I think what I was saying earlier about like the concept of death being very like frank in this movie is because her sadness is conveyed in a very, very frank and confident manner, which is a weird way to describe sadness. But I think what I mean is that she is so connected to the deep, like, turmoil that's inside of her, but it's not even turmoil or sadness. I think it's just a very frank realization on her part that she's an extremely sensitive human being and doesn't connect to reality the same way that most people do. And that's what causes her depression. And she just like knows this about herself and is just like, yeah, this is, I'm just not connected to this world the way that most people are. And that's just how I am.
Well, it's wonderful to see Nicole like inject this performance with this frankly like dead performance with so much life.
Yeah.
Because she's like on this like vibration that she mm-hmm. keeps herself out basically the entire film until she decides to end her own life. Or like when we see her end her life, she like has like a peace about her and right. then it's kind of over. The humming is gone. Like the hum in her bones is gone. But I feel like she comes from a place of total and complete, like she has such a high self-esteem for specifically her brain, mm-hmm. for specifically like the places that she decides to go. And I think that in this movie, that confidence, like that self-esteem is what carries through, or is what we then relate back to the other women in this film, mm-hmm. who are severely unconfident.
Yes.
And like really unbelievably small in their own thinking of themselves. Like, right. for example, Julianne Moore's character has like a moment where she kisses another woman mm-hmm. and she finds it so freeing and so liberating for like half a second and then realizes like how crippling her life actually is.
Yeah.
That she, like in just a fleeting moment, she was confident, but immediately retreated back into herself.
Yeah, totally.
And throughout the entire movie, she is completely like retreated and gone. And seeing her and her, like she has no mind castle that she's building.
No.
She has no confidence in herself and no strength and like no understanding of where she's going to go from there mm-hmm. versus Nicole Kidman's Virginia Woolf understands where she's going. No one will let her get there.
Yeah. However, this is another thing that I really love about this movie is that you spend all this time with her and you're on her side the entire time. And then it kind of comes to the head with that scene at the train station
yes.
where you finally get the input of her husband and he's going like, I fucking understand, but you're being selfish. Like, I understand how difficult this is for you, et cetera, but all the people who love you, who are around you, have tried to do is accommodate you and try it. Because we love you, we want you around us, and there is no recognition of that. It's always just, we have to accommodate Virginia. And I think that's a really, really valid point to bring up, because so much of like, of death and mental illness, et cetera, like it becomes selfish. And I don't mean selfish in a negative way. Like it can't help but be selfish because it is about the self. But there is this whole other story of like, how is it affecting the people around you? And a lot of people don't talk about that. And then she finally like gets pissed about it. And she's just like, yeah, I haven't, essentially, she says, like, I haven't taken the time to think about how it would affect you, because I can't even cope with how it's affecting me. Like, I so badly want to flip a switch and be different for you, but I can't even do that for myself. So that's not even a part of this conversation. And in that moment, it like really unites them in sadness and in anger against this thing that ultimately wins in the end, because she just, there's no way for her to be any different way. And it's, that's, that I think is the more heartbreaking conversation, is the, no matter how much she wants to please others, there's nothing that she can do. But for her, it's just like, this is how it has to be. Like, I'm simply not someone who's meant to live.
Yeah. I think that there are people in this world that never get bored.
Yeah.
There are people in this world that always are just like in their heads, and there are people in this world that like truly fundamentally believe that it's much harder to live and continue living than it is to end it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that for her, it would be really, really unfair of us to be like, you fucking suck for like ending your life. Yeah. Like you've ruined it for everyone else, when in reality, like, the only person she owes anything to, and this is like really evidenced by the film, is like herself. Mm-hmm. She only really owes anything to herself. Like, she came into this world alone. She's exiting this world alone. And I think for her, it was almost like her being extremely kind to herself.
Yeah.
Like make it easier on her brain, make it easier on herself. And like, frankly, just like give herself a fighting chance at like, being happy.
Yeah.
Because I think that in her mind, it's not overrated. Like, it's something that is incredibly pure, and like she wants so desperately more than anything, to the point that she will literally be like, maybe I'm just not meant to live in this life. I'm going to go to the next one and see if that'll make me happy. And like, the chance is worth it. Like, even if there's truly nothing on the other side and she just, it's like over, she's like, at least I would have tried to make like made the attempt of happiness.
Yeah.
And Nicole Kidman, frankly, gets it.
She like, does.
She fucking gets it. And I think that that's really, this is her best role.
Yeah.
Like, hands period. Down. Period. End of discussion. This is Nicole Kidman's best role. She has not done anything, in my opinion, since then that's like had, that's captured her range in this way, that's captured her nuance in this way. Like, it's specifically the nuance for me.
Yeah. I mean, this is also just incredibly good material. This is one of like that piece is one of those pieces of source material that it really is like once in a lifetime. Because it's just so beautiful. I really, really want to read the book, but the movie is incredible. Like, there's so many little things and like parallels and references to Mrs. Dalloway that I missed last time that I got this time that are like perfect and such a good part of the story. And like, I love that Meryl Streep is almost like she represents the audience in a way. Like, you're kind of on her side the whole time of like, like, don't let your friend kill himself. That would fucking suck. And which is how we feel about Virginia Woolf and about Julianne Moore. Like, please don't do that. And then eventually, after enough chatter towards the end, she is finally realizing like sometimes people are fucking tired. And we have to allow them to take control of their lives and dictate what is their time to do whatever it is that they want to do in their life, whether that's live, go on a walk, or die, you know, like whatever it might be. And she finally realizes that in a very painful way at the end of the movie. And I think that we, the audience, like parallel her character. And it's just such a good movie.
It's just so fucking good. This got Nicole Kidman her Academy Award, yes, her Oscar for Best Actress. And frankly, well deserved.
Well fucking deserved, girl.
There will be no arguments here.
Yeah, her, no complaints.
I hope she kept that nose prosthetic.
I hope so too.
I hope it's like in a shadow box, like hanging on her wall or something.
In a jar of formaldehyde. I hope it's Virginia Woolf's real nose.
Not her real nose.
Sorry.
Mummified. I can't. They only mummified her nose.
Listen, she would think that was funny.
She would. She would find it amusing.
Yes, that's amusing.
Hilarious.
Oh my God. I love this movie.
I don't know, you guys. You honestly, it's one of those, what do the kids say? If you know, you know.
If you know.
Like,
IYK, YK.
IYK, YK. Like, like, if you know, you know. You have to watch this movie before you die. Like, it's one of those movies where you think it's going to be boring. It's not. I fucking swear. Frankly, the trailers make it seem boring as fuck.
Yeah, but it's a really good movie.
The poster makes it seem boring as fuck. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. The odds stacked against this movie.
Yeah.
But if you break through the bad marketing, you get to this beautiful little Kinder Egg.
Yeah. You mean Kinder Egg?
Whatever. Kinder Egg. The ones with the cream in it. You bite it, there's cream.
Do you mean Cadbury egg or
Kinder egg?
There are two eggs.
How many eggs are there?
Kinder and Cadbury.
Both of them are British eggs.
One is not. One is, I think, like Swedish or Belgian or some shit. Kinder is.
Okay, they're both European eggs.
Well, yeah, they're both European.
Which one's the British egg?
Cadbury.
I'm talking about, does that one have cream?
Yeah.
It's that one. That's okay. The one. Cadbury egg.
Kinder eggs are the ones that have surprises in them.
Oh, that must be a fucking choking hazard.
That's why they're not legal in the U.S. They actually might be now. I think I've
the
seen them.
The more you know, the more you coals.
The more you nickel. And on that note.
I was literally going to say, don't sue us, Danny.
Oh, my God.
Because you said end on that note. And I was like,
no. You're the best, Monica. That's what we say, remember?
Yes. Sorry, it's so like in my body that it's like,
that's why I say daddy all the time. It's gonna take some getting used
to. Had to stop myself from saying daddy one time and it literally broke my thought because I was gonna be like, she's such a, and I had to be like,
a boy.
Yeah, I have had to make a conscious
effort. I think
we can
call people daddies still.
Okay, yeah, I agree. And now it's time to shout out our best boy.
Except there is no best boy.
Yeah, I was going to say, we did a little bit of research on the hours. They don't have a best boy listed. However, we're just going to go ahead and shout out the director of photography because this is fucking beautiful. Stunning. A beautiful film. A stunning film. Who is and that? That is my boy, Seamus McGarvey.
Yeah, Seamus, you rock.
I read it as Seamus.
It's not.
It's not. It's Seamus McGarvey.
Oh, he did Cyrano.
He did Cyrano,
which was a stunning film.
I feel it though.
He also did Atonement, which was fucking incredible.
Need someone to say the bottom of Peter Dinklage.
Wait, what is the song that they sing? That the
that song, right? Waiting for someone to say
They sing a couple different ones, but the main one is like the. Is it like the I do something? I don't know.
No, hold on.
And the Avengers. I don't care.
Oh, who gives a fuck? This movie is a blur to me. Like,
okay, let's just end it while we're ahead. I think we're behind at this point. I'm kidding. Aaron, don't nod.
Wow, that was really fucked up.
And that was really fucked up how you nodded and shit.
Peter Dinklage should do more like leading man roles.
I agree, but I have a sneaking suspicion it's not him who's not taking them.
That's so true. Anyway. Hollywood, do better.
All right, Monica, you're the best.
You're the best, Jessica. I'll see you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.